Good evening, modern escapism team. Your mission, should you choose to accept it, is to embark on an 8-month operation of utmost importance. Codename, Mission Escapable. You will infiltrate the world of Ethan Hunt and his impossible mission force, reviewing, dissecting, and surviving every single Mission Impossible film. From daring stunts to death-defying plots, your objective is to determine whether these missions truly are impossible. Each month, you will rendezvous with your audience to debrief them on your findings. Expect twists, betrayals, and explosions, both on screen and in your discussions. As always, should any of you or the modern escapism team be caught excessively nitpicking Tom Cruise's running style, the Secretary would disavow all knowledge of your actions. This podcast will start in 5 seconds. Good luck, team. Hello everyone, and welcome to our new watch-along series, Mission Escapable, where we will be watching and reviewing every Mission Impossible film, from 1996's Mission Impossible to 2025's Mission Impossible, The Final Reckoning. My name is Stig, and I will be your host for this podcast series, and joining me this time round, we have Biggie.
Walk away, yeah, oodles. Walk away, abort.
And a man who has never seen a single Mission Impossible film. It's Oodles or Dim.
I don't know how I've not done it, but yeah, I genuinely thought this film was Bourne Identity when I first put it on.
He said, I've seen Mission Impossible 1, but not the rest. And then after he watched it, I've never seen that.
Ever.
Love it.
Yeah. It's exciting.
So yeah, we're here, 8 months. This won't take as long as X-Men.
No.
So it will cover the whole calendar year, like more like that one did. But it's a good chunk of films. And the interesting thing about this series is, like, up for the first four at least, it was spread out over, you know, 15 years.
Really?
I can't believe the year this came out. I was so shocked at how young he looks. I was like, oh my God.
And then when Christopher McQuarrie took over in 2015, it was just like, bang, 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 here's another Mission Impossible film for you.
Yeah, man. Yeah, man.
And I'm putting it as a disclaimer, I haven't seen the last one. Is anyone I haven't seen?
I haven't seen the last one, and I'm going to save it.
Oh, Brill, we can all watch it together.
I never got around to watch it in the cinema, and I just thought that I might as well wait now.
Yeah, we can do it together, sure, man.
And we watched the last one together, and then we all have like our final thoughts.
Start crying and stuff, and being like, "It's been emotional." eight months from
never
now,
seen
right?
Sprint again.
I'll be a different age. You'll all be different ages. I'll have had a birthday by then. I mean, I'll be 38 by the time we finish this. Oh my days! That's what I mean.
I might be dead by the time we finish this pod.
Ooh, I will be by the time the last one comes out.
Yeah, the last episode might be in memoriam to Biggie, a long fallen agent.
Agent down.
He'd have wanted us to continue. I got this will age poorly if that does happen.
Oh, yeah.
Oh dear, we've got another Bob man we can sub in.
Yeah, we'll get him. Oh. I don't think he'd do it.
Right, so we're talking Kurt was about...
Damn me if he wants.
We're going to be talking about the first film in the series, 1996, spy action film, directed by Brian De Palma, Mission Impossible.
Yeah, and you may ask, Oodles, why did you not see it? I was I was 9 years old when this came out.
I was 10 and saw it, but I think it's perfect age for like.
It is a PG.
It. Yeah.
I was 23.
Fucking hell. Awkward.
So this stars Tom Cruise, John Voight, Emmanuel Barrett, Jean Reno, Vin Rames, Kristin Scott Thomas, Vanessa Redgrave, and Emilio Estevez.
And Henry Zerny, isn't it?
Henry Zerny as well, yes. Yeah. Sorry, I missed him. Yep. Pretty good cast.
It's a good cast.
Film. They're all, yeah, pretty stacked cast, yeah, for that time.
Yeah, man, definitely.
This was released in May 20... this was released on the 22nd of May 1996 with a budget of $80 million. Let's play the budget game. How much do you think it made?
Oh, $80
million. I know this.
I don't know it, so let me have
it was part of my trivia.
$290 million.
$457 million.
That's huge, adjusting for inflation.
For a mid-90s film.
That's huge.
That massive. Yeah.
That's mad.
That's a huge turnaround. So, yeah, it's safe to say that this...
no wonder it launched a franchise.
On a $70 million budget as well.
Wow.
Yeah. Music by Danny Elfman as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah. All the big names in this.
Huge. I mean... Directed by Brian De Palma. Huge.
Yeah, exactly. So, I will be the compare and take us through the plot. Jump in when you want to, as ever.
Mm.
And yeah, well, we're going to go. Here we go.
Light that fuse.
So, we start. We see an interrogation playing out. There is a dead woman on the bed. Emilio Estevez, his character Jack Harmon.
Huge shock, by the way. Didn't I expect Estevez in this?
I forgot he was in it.
He's uncredited as well.
Is he?
Is he really?
Yeah. Yeah. Obviously, we'll find out why. This is a sting. Tom Cruise, Ethan Hunt, is the man under the mask. And he was interrogating someone who seems to have killed a woman, and they're trying to extract a name from him.
Yeah.
This is the start of the masks throughout the whole series.
Oh, is this
films.
A running theme? Is this a running
theme? Oh, my God, yes.
However, not to spoil too much, but they get better because this one looks very rubbery.
It's literally Tom Cruise with a moustache almost, isn't it? It so looks like
teeth.
It. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. This is, they do a pretty good job, but it's obvious that there's like, it's a bit off. There's something a bit uncanny valley about like the mask.
Yeah.
They get the name from him. He pulls the mask off and he brings the woman back to life. Presumably she was taking something to slow her heartbeat. And like a death. And
how young was Tom Cruise in this film? I just can't believe when he whipped that mask off, it just threw me. I was like, Jesus.
I mean, he'd done Interview with a Vampire just before this.
He
looked about 12 in that.
Old Tom Cruise film in a long time, so everything that I've seen him recently has obviously been the last.
No, like Risky Business or anything like that, a Cocktail.
Yeah.
Everything I've watched him in has obviously been recent. So yeah it was kind of jarring to go back and see.
This was the start of his rise to power.
Yes,
yeah,
very much
you're right.
So. So we get the opening credits with the iconic theme. It's an absolute banger.
Oh, my God, it's so good. I didn't expect it to kick in that quickly. I thought it was going to be like an end thing. Oh,
is it
Lalo
Schifrin? Is that how you pronounce it?
Something
name?
Like that, Schifrin? Yeah.
Very famous composer.
I obviously know the Mission Impossible theme.
From the original show, isn't it?
It kicks in on the start. It's like, fuck, that's such a
so
good
theme.
And then we see the whole movie play out in front of us in that.
Yeah, we do. Because listeners, I watched this twice today, and I didn't realize that I thought we were seeing his past like things that he'd done, his past missions. No. When I watched it a second time, I went, "Oh, the whole film."
It's part of my trivia here. There are 7 plot points that are given away in the opening credits.
Yes,
brilliant, isn't it? But when you watch it for the first time, you just be like, yeah, whatever. It's just them on missions.
I thought there was past missions. I thought they were doing a Bond style, like sometimes on some of the Bond intros, they have like women diving into like past missions and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm.
The titles looked proper slow.
Crap.
Though, when it flashes up Mission Impossible.
Boom! It looks like it's something for like wordgenerator.com.
Yeah, yeah.
All the money got spent lighting the fuse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They used the original. They used the original fuse from the original show.
Oh, is that what they did?
Cool. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we do all that. The cuts to John Voight, his character, Jim Phelps. He's on a plane. He's given a new mission about stopping a man called Alexander Golitsyn.
I love when she says, do you want to watch a show? And he's, bear in mind, he's smoking on this plane. That's how old it is. he's having a fag.
I made a note there.
Go
so
on.
He obviously has, he gets the mission. They say they've got to stop him stealing the CIA knock list, which is a list of all of the undercover agents around the world. And then it says this message will self-destruct in 5 seconds.
Yeah.
He then lights a cigarette so it covers up.
Yeah, it's so cool.
It's a very nice little detail.
Yeah. I like when she says, do you want to watch is it like a Korean film or something like that? And then he knows
Ukrainian,
and he's like, this is from the Impossible Mission
Force.
Just
what I wanted on my long haul Ukrainian film.
And is it safe to have a self-destructing tape on a plane and it starts smoking?
I mean, it's a very small explosion. You get bigger explosions in a vape pen. Do you know what I mean?
Probably. Yeah, exactly.
You do now. Well, back then, I would have been a bit worried.
Yeah, but then again, he's smoking on the plane, like we say.
Yeah, we then cut to Jim. He's going over the mission with his team. I think we get like quite a good insight to the teams.
What I did think then in this beginning bit of the film, I thought, oh, maybe Tom Cruise isn't the star of this one. Maybe it's just an ensemble. Because it tricks you in a little bit, doesn't it? It tricks you in. It never says Ethan Hunt's the main guy. He's the point man, so he's the one that goes in. But it never like. The camera never stays on him, you know, like a main character. It stays on John Voight for like a good half hour in this film. Like he's the focal point.
Purpose, because
it's a trick, isn't
like,
it?
You sit down with the team and they're all like joking around with each other. So it's like, oh yeah, like they are agents.
They've done this a long time,
and there's a banter between them. And you're like, it quickly puts you into their team. And like, oh yeah, they're like these are good natured people.
Yeah, they're good folk.
Yeah.
But Emmanuel Bart's pout, Jesus Christ, I mean, she's stunning in this. The camera's got that soft focus when it looks on her.
For some reason, we're supposed to believe she's married to John Voight in this. She's like 21 and he's like 61.
I mean, even Kristen Scott Thomas is very attractive in this, but Emmanuel Bert, whatever you pronounce her name, is just...
She's called Claire in this film.
Claire, she looks stunning, man.
She's so gorgeous.
Pretty.
Jack shows Ethan the chewing gum explosive.
Yeah, the red light, green light.
Together. Yeah, you've got 5 seconds before boom. Do not chew it.
I don't think
that's the lasagna.
That's what he said. I don't think that chewing gum would break Tom Cruise's teeth though. We're not going to be able to keep them in.
Ethan and the team, they infiltrate a gala with Ethan is dressed up as a senator in, again, a very rubbery-looking mask.
Colonel Sanders.
The target has been marked. Hannah's got these special tracking glasses.
Mm-hmm.
She can, see him through the crowd. Which
she sprays
really cool.
him. The other one sprays him, doesn't she? So he's got,
I really like the bit where they're trying to get... They're waiting through at security, and he's like, oh, I did have a staff member once called Jack. He was always really late to his job.
And that's when he says, shut up, Colonel Sanders. Do you know what I did know? Because, again, I've watched this twice. So there's a bit later on where he explains that Ethan knew that there were other Impossible Mission Force agents in there, in that room. When you rewatch it, you can see them. You can see them staring, staring at everybody. You can see he's not making that shit up. They genuinely do. I thought, I'm going to go back and just watch it again. Yep, they're all there in plain sight, and the camera focuses on them. They're not blurred out like the rest of it. They are genuinely there, but you wouldn't notice it first time.
Yeah.
Quite
really
smart.
Good detail, isn't it?
They've just blended
in the background.
Yeah.
When it's highlighted later,
you go,
you watch it back, you're like, oh, yeah, there they are.
When he's talking to the lady... And there's just a waiter staring at him, and he ends up being the drunk man snugging the woman later on, and then he ends up being the waiter in the restaurant later. I'm like, this is fucking clever.
We've also got the start of the mad technology as well, when you've got the clear vision from the glasses and that day and age, and you've got the hacking screens that come up. And it's just laughable.
But like then when they pull out a laptop later and they're on Windows 3.1.
Yeah, and none of them have got trackpads. They haven't got trackpads.
Yeah,
amazing.
It's all keyboard based. It's cool though. Yeah they finally get in, don't they?
They get in, they set up a camera to catch him downloading the list.
Yeah.
They capture him. We see him downloading the list. Them two leave. Ethan and Claire leave. But during the extraction, the lift begins to rise by itself. And the system is overridden. As it lifts up, a trap is triggered and some spikes come down from the ceiling and impale Jack through the head.
Through the fucking eye. This got
through the face. Yeah.
It cuts out and I thought, what the fuck?
For a brief second, you see that spike go into his face.
Yeah, you do.
You're just wow.
PG film.
And that, at that time, Emilio Estefez was quite a big star.
Huge.
And he's killed within the first 10 minutes of the film. Killed off. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I genuinely thought the whole film would be all these guys. What a bait and switch.
Yep, nope. At this point, Jim leaves his post, says he's coming to Ethan, informs Jim the package is in the open, and he tells Ethan he's been followed and it's an ambush. We see a gun shot via Jim's camera, his hands covered in blood, and then he falls.
The film footage of that is so funny. It's so clear. It's amazing.
I ask you a question, right, Oodles? When you know later on that he shot towards himself. Obviously, when you rewatch it, you can see his hand like turning around.
Yeah, you can.
But did you clock that the first time?
No, I thought he was dead. I thought he was dead.
But when you watch it, knowing it, you look and you're like, oh yeah, you can see the wrist bending.
He lost his whole team.
Yeah.
I thought the whole film was going to be him getting revenge on the impossible mission force.
But this is actually kind of what De Palma does with his films. This is quite a tense part of the film because you just feel like they give the impression, like, walk away, abort. You know it's going wrong. And then just everyone gets taken out one by one.
Did you notice the detail with the soundtrack throughout this whole bit, the outside bit with the fog? There's a ticking clock.
Oh, interesting. I didn't notice
that. I didn't clock that. It's very noir.
It's
that real feel of an old style detective noir kind of thing going on.
Yeah. So Jim's fallen into the river. Hannah gets into a car that explodes,
which we think is in. She's in there with Claire.
Mm-hmm. He tells Sarah to abort.
Yeah,
but she continues to follow Galitzin. Is that how I pronounce it?
Yeah.
So she sees him get pulled in and stabbed, and then when Ethan eventually gets to her, he finds her. She's been pulled and stabbed as well, and he finds a knife embedded into her, and she dies. The list is no longer in Galitzin's possession, so Ethan runs off as the police arrive.
He doesn't just run off, he climbs off a fence. Climbs off a gate.
Yeah, he does. He climbs off a gate and just does one.
He runs to the telephone box, doesn't he?
Runs to the telephone box, he calls the IMF to tell them that the mission, about the mission, the list, and he meets up with Eugene Kittredge.
Yeah.
At a very unique-looking restaurant.
Yeah.
So, like, did you notice, like, the fish tanks above the windows at the front of the restaurant?
Yeah.
What a nightmare it would be to keep that clean.
As soon as I saw them in that restaurant, I was like, something's going to explode.
Yeah. Ethan's questioned why there was another team there and why they're in the restaurant now. So as Oodles points out, the waiter over there is like the drunk couple. That person there, that was a waiter at the thing. Person was there, like, and he points out that there's another team there. He asks him why there's another team there. Kittredge informs him that there's been a mole and they've been trying to track them down for the last 2 years because they've been working with an arms dealer called Max, who's corrupted the agent. He says the knock list isn't real. Golitzin was an undercover. And
he was part of IMF, wasn't he?
Yeah, they were trying to bait out the mole. And considering that Ethan is the only one left, they think that Ethan is the mole.
Yeah.
That's a fair.
I think so. I think you've got to remember the IMF are goodies.
They're part of the CIA. They're trying to undercover. They're trying to find out who the mole is. Only one person left in the team. He also informs him that they've discovered an influx of cash into his dad's farm.
130 grand.
Yeah, so it's basically accuses Ethan of being the mole. Ethan instead uses the gum, slams it onto a huge fish tank, which blows up, blows the waiter out of the restaurant. And then,
very iconic. He runs away.
And his first full pelt sprint.
First full pelt sprint. That's a good sprint, that one.
He's really good. He goes faster than the water.
And it's perfectly framed in the picture as well. He's right in the middle. Path.
It's a good 7, 8 out of 10 sprint.
Yeah, it's solid.
I can't rate it too high because I know some of the sprints that are coming up in this series.
Oh, right. So,
Stig Sprint Barometer, I think I'll give it a 7.5.
It's a good sprint.
It's a strong first sprint.
And he does a good sprint earlier when he's running up the steps of the bridge. But you can't call it a sprint when it's more of a canter running up them steps.
Yeah.
It's not full pelt.
Yeah, so he gets back to the safe house and he starts to try to figure out how to contact Matt.
Oh, do you know what my favourite bit is? When he pulls the light bulb out and then cracks it and uses it as a little noise trap. Then when he's in the safe house and then he's so fucking smart. He's one step ahead of everyone else, this guy.
Yeah. So the mole that was believed to work with the arms dealer named Max is part of Job 314.
Yes.
Is what we think it's called at start. Ethan realizes that Job 314 actually refers to the Bible verse Job 314.
Do you know, as soon as he said Job 314, as soon as he mentioned it, I was like, oh, that'll be Bible. Because I'm a nerd like that.
Yeah, I recognise that too.
Yeah, because it's a famous verse.
Yeah.
And he didn't click on.
He then begins to send out a lot of messages out on Usenet groups, which is back in the... It'd been like...
They used to exist.
but they were
only
like...
Reddit.
It's like kind of online things that meant that people, you know, like groups... Where you just chat, I think, and I think they might have been untraceable. I'm not too sure. But
they were untraceable. They were, they were.
It's a safe way of like chatting with people online.
Yeah,
think Telegram, but back in the 90s.
Yeah, and less nonsense.
My favourite search during this bit is where you type "job," and you just think how many results would he get back for "job"?
Nowadays, he would. He'd be on Indeed.com.
Yeah. He synced to LinkedIn, wouldn't it?
He does need a new job. To be fair, he's lost his team.
She'd be like, "How arms dealing taught me how to grow an empire." Join my 10-point seminar.
Subscribe now.
Yeah. Suddenly, Jim appears, all bloodied and wet.
Scared me. This. I didn't click on it. We're a dream at first.
No, you wouldn't do. It's not framed
like,
in the dream.
I was like, no fucking way.
It's not really framed in a dreamlike manner until it gets towards the end and he's a bit like, why did you leave Ethan?
I did know it's a dream and I almost laughed because I just thought, if it was real to where they ended up, then the guy that got shot went over a bridge in the water and made it all the way back with bleeding everywhere. I did chuckle because it made me laugh. I just thought, there's no way that's possible. Got to be a dream.
But it's not. Claire wakes him up. She's
It's actually her. That's
She tells him that she wasn't in the car. She ran to the bridge.
The first uncomfortable moment of the film for me when he really aggresses her on that bed. I thought we were going to do something to her. He gets right aggressive. But he's not. He's just fucking stressed, isn't he?
Mm. Yeah, but she's trying to like she doesn't.
She's trying to seduce him.
Well, yeah, she is. Like we learn,
we know
she
this.
Is, but she.
You could say she's a femme fatale.
She's not accepting that they're all dead. And I like this. She's just like, "Wake up, Claire. Jim's dead. They're all dead."
Yeah, I've heard that line before. That's a big line. That I think it might have been parodied on something, but yeah, that was fucking. But yeah, she is trying to seduce him. I mean, it worked on you, wouldn't it, Biggie?
Oh, you would have had to try that much.
He accuses her of being sent and searches her and explains to her what's happened and that he's going to find the real traitor.
Yeah.
So Ethan receives a message from Max proposing a meet-up. He's taken to meet Max.
Yeah.
We find out that it's a woman played by Vanessa Redgrave.
Yeah. She's good. Really shocked. Yeah, really good.
Yeah, she's very good in this. Yeah. He asks her for 150k, reveals himself not to be Joe.
Do you know what I like about this bit? It's throughout it, Tom Cruise is doing the mad grinning man bit that he does. And it's like, that's what he's like in real life. But he probably just keeps laughing at her. And I'm sort of like, it genuinely looks like he's enjoying himself. Like, sometimes you see Tom Cruise try too much in films. And I think he looked like he enjoyed the fuck out of doing this. That's probably why he kept coming back to it. It really looks like he's enjoying himself. Excuse me, but he's winding her up and stuff, and he's like, "Yeah, I'm gonna have the 150 grand today," and he's just laughing at her, just like, "Oh," and she likes him because of that.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, it's cool.
Yeah, yeah, she does like that bit of. She strikes me as a woman who likes to get a bit of a challenge back.
Yeah, yeah.
She's probably too used to a lot of yes people.
Well, she also worked out giant guards.
Yeah.
She also worked out that he wasn't the real one because the way he responded and emailed the text and stuff. She worked that out.
Yeah. So he tells her that the list that she's got isn't real and that it actually has a tracker on it. And if she tries to use it, they'll be here in a matter of minutes. So they do it. And then Kittredge and his team descend on the place. And then after that, she trusts him to say, okay.
I wonder why Kittredge brought his oldest members of his team. They all like old men.
I thought when I saw his Barnes, isn't it? When I saw him, and I thought, ooh, I wonder if that's like a guy from the original Mission Impossible TV show.
Yeah, and maybe.
It's a cameo for him. It wasn't.
No. He's got a lot of old later. People.
There's more of that later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I thought it was like, oh, maybe it's because I didn't know that. So I had a look up and I was like, oh, no, it's not.
Yeah.
The guy that plays Barnes is Dale Dye. He served in the Vietnam War and he appears in Full Metal Jacket, Platoon. He's one of the commanders.
Oh, is he a mainstay?
In every of the Vietnam films because he was an advisor for all of the shootings.
Right.
So he's very well recognised if you know your war film.
Yeah.
So he got promoted up to CIA, IMF.
Yeah. After all that.
That finally got a more of a cushy desk job. So she trusts him and she asks what he wants. And he said he wants 10 million in bonds. And
smart that. You can't do that nowadays, unfortunately, because they're traceable.
Yeah, and insurance that Job will be at the exchange.
He wants to know why.
Yeah, wasn't that the default thing for terrorists that wanted money in these sort of films back then? It was like untraceable bonds.
Yeah, always like Die Hard. Yeah, Die Hard,
always
remember?
The thing that they brought out.
They don't exist anymore, unfortunately. They're all digital. So you can't
like
shit.
NFTs.
Yeah, well, not quite.
They're Bitcoin these days, wouldn't it? I want 10 million Bitcoin.
Non-traceable Bitcoin.
NFTs.
non-traceable bored apes, please. 10 million pounds worth of bored apes.
Bored apes. That you can't make any profit on and probably only get about 350 quid out of.
Yeah, imagine that.
So, in order to get the actual knock list, Ethan has to call in the help. At this point, we are introduced to Vin Rames playing Luther.
Didn't see this come in.
Reno playing Krieger.
Yeah, Vin Rames, like, fresh off of Pulp Fiction, fucking coming in, being a cool motherfucker. I love him in this.
Well, Jean Reno would be off Leon at that point. Right?
Yeah, and then ready for Godzilla.
when did Leon come out?
94.
Is so
it 94 fair?
Pulp Fiction was 93, 94.
Yeah. They're all fresh off. Yeah.
But is Ving Rhames the only other person that appears in, what, all the films from now?
Spoiler alert.
Well, no, like, I think he's in the casting. You'd see it for
everything. I didn't know that. I don't check the casting on the films I'm not seeing.
Don't talk about future films, Biggie. We don't talk about future films.
Fair enough.
Now I know.
Takes the tension out of
He might not be in all the films.
You haven't seen them all. He's not. There you go.
Ethan, we're introduced to these two. He tells them that the mission is to break in and steal something at the CIA headquarters in Langley, which they're both like, are you fucking crazy? Like,
why I think
just,
this, this
why is... we just pop off down to Fort Knox while we're at it?
Because it'd be easier. I think there's some, it's ballsy to do this because it's the last place they expect to see him. The last place to the headquarters itself.
Yeah, exactly. I love this exchange as well. So Ethan's questioning Luther. He's like, where's the man that did this? Where's the man that did that? He goes, where's the man that brought the only man ever to hack into NATO Ghostcom? And he says, there was never any physical evidence I was anything to do with that. With that, that exceptional
piece of work. So good. And then he goes, din, 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 din. I love it when it creeps in every so often. Yes. That fucking soundtrack. I'm like, yeah, let's go.
So then, yeah, they accept it. They give him, tell him what he want, what they want. And he's like, right, fine. And yeah, it kicks in, the music kicks in, and the fire trucks roll.
Tell you what, straight away, though, did not trust Krieger.
Krieger.
Did not trust him. And I love Jacques Renault, but I didn't trust him.
Actually, before we actually go to the mission at Langley, Ethan explains what they have to do and how to get into the room. And so I've written it down here that he says, to get into the room, you need voice print ID, six-digit access code.
Yep.
You need retinal scan, double electronic key card. Inside the vault, there's no when there's no technician, it's protected by sound, temperature, and
pressure-sensitive
floor. And there's lasers on the only other entrance into the at the vent.
Yeah.
So it seems impossible. Someone to an impossible mission.
It would be.
It's a great it's mad security, man.
I like that. I mean, I like
when
that.
You talk about like we use two-factor authorization, and you've got this thing going on. It's like
I like that the engineer knows about the temperature floor and stuff like that, but he still takes a freezing cold drink and then it drips on floor.
If he gets to take it out, more when he's in there, it's fine.
It's fine when he's in, isn't it? Yeah.
So yeah, now we queue. Da, da, da,
da, da. Oh, so, so good.
Roll up to Langley in the fire trucks. Krieger and Ethan go off with the guard, while Claire she kind of goes off in another direction, and they knock the guard out, climbing to the vents while she drugs the technician.
This is again where she seduced Biggie.
You can have all the lists.
Biggie would gladly just drink the whole poisoned coffee down.
I'll give him my shopping list, my backlog list. You know, she can have it all.
I do like that the guard was just like, hang on, wasn't the three of you? And he's just like, bam.
Yeah. And then Krieger nearly kills him. He's like, no body count, no body. Because Ethan knows these are honest to God, like serving people. Do you know what I mean? They're just normal folk. But Krieger's like, stab, stab, stab.
So we see Ethan get up in the vents and start testing out the equipment, heading into the room. So you kind of get an idea of how the sound equipment works. Toast.
Krieger's got allergies.
Technician makes his way back into the room after his break, and while Ethan's hanging above him.
Yeah.
So thank God that his peripheral vision was just a bit higher than his peripheral vision.
It's not even that, mate. If you'd have looked down on the reflective surface,
you'd see him
above him.
What the fuck?
I thought that. I don't know about you, but when he took the medicine that he's having, normally you put your neck back, so you would have looked up.
He does look up slightly at that point, but yeah.
To be fair, though, when I used to work in a shop where it's just me on my own in this single shop.
You'd never expect it, would you?
Someone could have sat in a corner of that shop for hours and I'd have not noticed them. And I'd have not noticed them.
Yeah. I mean, it's not even you wouldn't think, though, would you?
No, would you fuck?
Check above it, just in case.
I do it every time I walk in, I look up. Yeah. That.
So, but then the drugs.
I do now after watching this film.
Yeah, I'm doing it now.
Yeah, the drugs kick in. He throws up in the bucket and leaves the room. And that's when Ethan begins his little hacking to hack the system, hanging in midair. He looks the way he moves in this contraption, the way he holds his legs. I mean, his core strength must be fucking incredible.
Did you notice he wore ballet shoes?
I didn't, no.
Yeah.
Do you want a bit of trivia about that now, or do you want it later?
Well, when he puts coins in his shoes.
Oh, yeah.
I know that.
Let him have it.
Go on. What does he do with coins in his shoes? What does he do? He uses it for...
Balance.
Because in real life, what did Tom Cruise keep doing?
Hitting his head on the floor.
and kicked it in his head on the floor. Kept banging his head on the fucking floor. But yeah, they put the deliberately put ballet shoes on him because obviously you can kill your toes in ballet shoes. I don't know if you ever wore them, lads. But you can kill your toes a little bit. And when he puts his feet on the desk, he like hooks a little bit. And I was like, they're ballet shoes then. Mm. Such a cool idea.
Clever. So you must have seen that scene because it was...
No, I've seen that scene in parody. Everything else.
Ah, so you've never seen the trailer or seen that clip at all?
No. Wow. I didn't know. I thought once he'd gone back to the toilet to throw up and stuff, I thought, right, he's going to get... I didn't realise there's the bit where the sweat's dribbling down his glasses. And then I was wondering, why is he wearing glasses?
It's the camera. He's got the camera.
Oh, so he can see it. Yes, so he can see it. Because he's...
I just thought it was really impressive, actually, if you think about that. If you look
it's
at the
all
way
practical.
It's all practical. And it looks, the way Cruise moves, it looks like the room has no gravity. Yeah. He moves and swings around that room like he's actually just
so
dangling,
good.
Like there's no gravity. Look, it must have taken him like ages to try to get that.
And
right
his body in this film, he took his clothes off earlier in the film. He is fucking hench for a 5'5" dude. Hench. Looks mint.
Yeah, suddenly a rat appears in the vent, which freaks Krieger out, and he drops Ethan, and he catches him just as he's about to hit the floor.
I watched this film twice on Netflix. Mm-hmm. Does Krieger kill that rat? Because it's dead behind him the next second.
Yeah, yes, I agree. I think he must have used his teeth.
No, I thought he used a knife.
But he's holding Tom Cruise with both hands.
Yeah, but that's why he has a knife in his hand later and drops it.
Yeah, but we don't see him kill the rat, do we?
He'll kill the rat, and he's in my mind, what he's done is
kept his kept knife,
but he's still got the knife in his hand.
Yeah.
Holding the rope.
Got you.
It's wild, that. Because I'm like, did I blink and miss him kill a rat with his teeth or something?
That's exactly how I thought he'd probably do it.
He's inches from the floor.
It's so good.
And
apparently, with the trivia as well, sorry, Bigger, apparently, on that bit, they dropped him so many fucking times. He kept saying, go again. Go again.
Oh, that's Cruise for you.
Yeah, the one bit where apparently in some of the trivia where he busts his nose and everything, he's like, wipe it away, come on, let's go again. That man, professional at his stunts.
I love the hand waving when he's above it. He's like, whoa.
Yeah.
He's like it's really good. An inch, 2 inch off the ground, if that.
Yeah.
He could lick the ground. He could have licked it.
Yeah. It's really tense. Like, I think that the fact there's
no music is
perfect because that room, it has to be as quiet as possible. And if you were to have like doom, 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 like any kind of like tense music over the top, it would have just ruined that scene completely.
Yeah.
Have they never made a game of this film?
No.
Because it'd be perfect.
Tense. I mean, there might have been a tie-in PS1 game.
Yeah, but that wouldn't... I mean, a real game, not a shit game.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so it's, as I say, it's already very tense, and then suddenly a bead of sweat starts to roll down his glasses.
Oh.
He has to catch that before it hits the floor.
So good.
Krieger starts to pull Ethan up, but the rope starts to make too much noise. So he whips him up quickly as he takes the disc, and Krieger takes the disc, he drops the knife, it lands on the desk. Technician enters the room and sees the knife, and he's like,
huh?
Which you would be. Why?
Yeah, of course you would.
Yeah.
Because he looks up straight away, doesn't he? There's no one upstairs.
Yeah, Metal Gear Solid, like, exclamation mark pings above his head.
Whose knife is this?
And then he clicks on the computer to find out that the list has been stolen.
Yeah. And they've got to get out, so he smokes the vents.
Yeah, throws off a few smoke grenades and escapes the firefighters.
Da-da! Film ends.
Yep. Done. Kittrick tells Barnes, only them two, to know about the breach, and he says the technician needs to be sent to Alaska. Poor fucker.
But again, showing that they're not the bad guys. They're not going to just kill him because he knows. They're just going to like send him off as furthest Alaska in some kind of satellite dish and leave him there for the rest of his fucking life. He knows too much.
I mean, Kitteridge has a temper.
He does have a temper
throughout this film. He's badly mannered.
Yeah. He's a terrible CEO of the IMF, isn't he?
100%.
So the team now relocated to London. Krieger says he wants to be in on the meetings with Max, and he has hold of the list, but Ethan reveals that he doesn't, and he switched it with him with some sleight of hand. He does a little magic trick, some little sleeve and everything, and he manages to convince Krieger that he switched the discs when they were before he got to the vent.
But he didn't.
Well, Krieger froze the disc in the bin, and I thought it's a good job that disc didn't break.
Yeah,
mate, floppy discs were made out of fucking steel, mate. Those fucking didn't break. But he did have the real one, didn't he?
He did have the real one. Yeah, it was a ruse. It was a double bluff.
But again, that's Ethan like not cracking under any pressure. He's just like, yeah, fucking, let's go.
Yeah, he gives a real disc to Luther and asks him to look at
the thing is with Luther as well, instantly I was like, that man's a bro. He's never going to betray anyone.
Yeah.
You can just I didn't suspect Claire, to be fair.
And he says that Liz cannot get out, so he says
yeah,
so there's obviously a plan for them later for that to happen. Just before that, picks up a Bible, notices that it says Drake Hotel, and we get a little voiceover from before in the film where Jim says that he was stationed at the Drake Hotel.
Yeah.
Did you suspect anything at this point?
Well, at this point, I just thought, when he sees the Drake Hotel thing, I thought it was just reminding him of his lost comrades. I thought he was just like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
They're still gone. Like, they're still gone.
They do it in a way where he's just kind of remembering, like something's triggered him remembering his old friend.
Yeah. I did not expect to see John Voight again. Like, let me just tell you that much.
Claire shows Ethan a news report that his parents have been framed as the front for a drug ring.
Yeah, because they want to choke him at the only place they could.
Kittredge has set it up because he wants to try and lure Ethan out. But Ethan hangs up on the phone. He hangs up so they can't trace where he is, but just enough for them to know that he's in London.
That's what they wanted.
Something's in.
However, and this, the first time I watched this, when the strange dressed man in the second booth of the phone box, I was like, that's going to be something, and turned around and it's John Voight.
I forgot that it was Jim, and I thought, because I saw him, I remember being there, and it's been a long time since I watched this.
Yeah.
I thought that was Krieger, and it was going to reveal, like, he was going to turn around as Ethan walked off.
Oh, right. So he's listening in.
Yeah, but it wasn't. No, that was Jim.
It's Jim. Big Jim.
Jim is back. He survived. They go off and have a little talk.
They have a cup of tea and Wetherspoons, don't they?
Yeah. And he tells Ethan that it was Kittredge who shot him.
Yeah,
and then Ethan starts to replay the night through his head as they're talking.
But he's agreeing with Jim, but he doesn't believe him. It's showing us that he thinks you are a lying sack of shit.
So we see what Ethan thinks happened. So he's talking to him, and then we see these scenarios in Ethan's head. So he thinks Jim controlled the lift.
Yeah,
he shot himself and like used fake blood. He thinks Krieger stabbed Gullitson and Sarah because the knife's
the
matched.
Knife.
Yeah, the knife, yeah.
Claire blew up the Clark car and then he thinks, no, that doesn't make sense.
Because I like Claire.
And then he envisions Jim crawling out the river and setting the bomb off.
Yeah.
So then Ethan asks Jim, he says, why, Jim, why? And he says it in a way
that he knows.
Where he's asking Jim, why did you do it? And he's almost giving him a chance to
admit it,
but Jim is obviously still going along with the.
And he's and he says Kittredge, he's in a bad marriage. He's only on 64 grand a year.
No more Cold War. There's nothing to do with it. Poor pension. No more secrets and like bad marriage. But because it was obvious it was going to happen. But it's the way that Ethan comes out of those like kind of thoughts and looks at him.
Mm.
It's definitely a. Jim obviously doesn't pick up on it. He's not.
De Palma in this scene as a director is letting us, the audience, know that Ethan knows, but Ethan's not letting on that he knows. And he was giving him I think that was Ethan's last speck of humanity for his old friend to be like, this is your last chance, but I'm not going to tell you it's your last chance.
Mm. Yeah.
And then as soon as he doesn't, he's like, his face changes, like, right then, I'm off to France. It just gets back into, because he just knows then that's it. Jim's out. Jim's out for good. He's the one that's betrayed us. He's Job. Do you know what I mean? That kind of thing. He just knows. At that point, he knows.
Because I actually rewound and watched this bit just because of the way that Ethan says to Jim, why? And I'm like,
yeah, he's asking him. That. It's his last chance.
And then Ethan's so cool about it afterwards. I'm like, oh, hang on. Like, for a second, I thought he was asking why. And I rewatched it and I was like, okay, I get it. Like,
he's giving him his last chance without saying this is your last chance. It's clever, man. Clever.
We then cut to a train.
No, we don't.
We see Kittredge get some tickets and
No, Ethan goes back to the hotel and sleeps with Jim's wife.
Which again would have happened to me.
Yeah, he does, yeah. He sleeps with his wife.
Don't know if it's like a fish.
Well, she kisses his hand a lot. Maybe it does. And then it cuts to black. Yeah, and then at the end they said, don't cover another man's wife. So
that's first base
fucked.
For me.
I think they fucked, and it's a PG film, so
yeah, true. Anyway, so now we get onto the train. Max is on there. Ethan tells her, look under the seat. There's the list. And she reveals where the money is.
This is also the point where if you didn't know, this is definitely an American film because they call it the Chunnel. Not the Channel Tunnel. Americans love to call it the Chunnel.
The Chunnel? But isn't Vanessa
Ridley? Yeah, but she's not the fucking script writer, is she?
Yeah, true. But
actually, we don't say Chunnel in this part of the world. We say Channel Tunnel.
Yeah, I was going to say. So, yeah, so she verifies it's the list, tells him where the money is, and while all this is happening, we see a man in a trench coat assembling a gun.
Yeah, yeah. I thought this was going to be Job at first.
Yeah.
Technically, like
after
it is.
She revealed where the money is, we see that Luther is jamming the signal to make sure that.
Yeah, boy.
I like this bit where, and then Kittredge, as it's happening, we see there's going to be an assembly. Kittredge and Barnes are searching the train. Luther notices this and he walks off, and the attendant is just like,
he's like, oh, cheers. Everyone's going, phone. Yeah. My phone's.
hello. Yeah. But then Kittredge, he notices Claire and follows her. She comes into the baggage area to tell Jim that Ethan's coming, so at this point it's been revealed that Claire
and Max betrays Ethan as well by sending her bodyguard into where he's going to get the money as well. So if everybody just did a deal, they'd all walk away fine. But
every
there's always a betrayal, it's where it goes
money.
Wrong.
Yeah, so it's revealed she knows that Jim's alive and they're going to frame Ethan. But then suddenly Ethan rips off the rubber.
He was the one assembling the gun.
Feel that he's behind it.
Yeah. I had to rewind that several times because that transition is so good. It looks so good.
For its time, it's really
100%.
Good.
You watch it again and you can almost not tell when it goes from Voight to Ethan.
Yeah, he does take that mask off quicker than he ever does in the whole rest of the film. It's a really quick rip off.
It's really well done.
Yeah, because in the other mask, they're almost stuck to it. They're stuck to his face.
And this one is just goes off,
whereas this one's just like.
But I think it looks good. If you watch it again,
it does look good for his time.
It actually does look good.
Yeah, it's a good transition. You're right, it is. But then suddenly Jim arrives in the shadows.
Thou shalt not covet your friend's wife.
Yeah, he knew about Jim before London because of the Bible. Jim tells Claire that he didn't know about her then.
Yeah.
And that this was the last test to see. And obviously,
and he shoots his wife.
But he also asks Ethan for the explanation. It's classic end of a monologue. It's I shoot you, can you just tell me how all this happened?
Yeah, true. He also says to him, she was never convinced her charm would work on you, but I was supremely confident.
Oh, John Boy. when you know about him in real life as well, he's a bad man. Oh, John.
Ethan hands over the bonds to Claire. Ethan puts on the glasses and he reveals to Kittredge that Jim is the mole.
So this basically is the get out of jail for Ethan. He is now in the clear.
Yeah.
But
I like the way he throws the glasses. John Boyd, he catches it like, whoa.
But at this moment, Ethan could have walked away and gone, right, I've done it. But revenge is the dish best served cold, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that, and he also, I know Claire was like in on it, but then Jim shoots him.
Why does he kill his wife?
Knocks Ethan down.
I think it happens
twice,
actually by accident.
I don't know why. No,
I thought
weren't.
It was in the tussle.
He aims at him and shoots him.
I thought it was in the tussle,
no,
wasn't it?
No.
No, nope, there's no Sussle. He literally points. He points the gun at her, shoots her, and then he knocks.
I think it's generally because they slept together. So he's just like, "You went too far, bang."
Yeah, or it's like
no loose ends. Yeah, no one knows he's alive then.
Yeah. Well, the fact that this escape plan was to
on his own
to a helicopter suggests it was gonna leave her behind anyway. Yeah. So he shoots her. He gets out. He escapes out of the hatch and. They chase each other down the end of the
train. Did not expect this little set piece on top of the train.
I'm just going to say this now. As a planned escape, it's not the best well thought out plan, let's be honest.
The problem is, right, like I know the CGI is not the best, but the set piece itself's quite impressive until we see the entrance to the channel tunnel. Doesn't look like that in real life, by the way. It's not just on the end of the cliff. and it's not in the countryside. But what the fuck the helicopter did is unbelievable. It's cool as fuck, but it's unbelievable. Please explain, Stig, what happens to this helicopter that has been piloted by Krieger.
So I made another note here saying that what I like about this set piece is they aren't running on top of the train. Because one of my bugbears
like
is
a Wolverine.
Is where people fight. Yeah, they just fight and run around on top of a train like it isn't going... like
220 miles per hour, that train.
Yeah, exactly. It isn't going hundreds of miles per hour, but these people can just stand on top of a train and
they
fight.
They can't do shit.
They're struggling, and they're like, he has to let go and like let his, them, you know, and grab on. Like,
you know what I did like as well? Like,
he's trying to go one way, the train's going the other way.
I like that Tom Cruise usually in films, he don't like to let his hair go shit. Oh, it went shit in there, so it just kept flopping on his face.
Yeah.
Well, if this was these days, he probably would have done that for.
He'd do oh, I'd do it for real, yeah.
So this is green screen.
It looked all right for its time, though. I can imagine the impressive people.
Yeah, it looked all right for a midnight. Yeah. Fine. So, yeah, the helicopter, Ethan clips the helicopter to the train.
It's so funny. I thought he were dead.
Yeah, and then Krieger's just like, he's like, fuck. Like, so he has to take the helicopter into the tunnel to follow the train because that's the only way.
I'm sorry, but it wouldn't fit.
Well, not only that, a train comes the other way and doesn't hit it. Yeah. So, it's a very small helicopter. It must be
the wind velocity of the train going the other way would surely spun that off.
It'd be nigh on impossible for the updraft for a helicopter to even continue flying in that tunnel. Yeah. Nigh on impossible.
What is the airspeed velocity of a helicopter attached to it?
That is the difference. We shall find out. We're not here to destroy the science behind this fun little romp.
No. Right, if we destroy the science and physics in these films, we'd be fucked. So... Jim manages to jump to the helicopter. Ethan's hanging off the train. Almost gets decapitated by the blades, but because the top of the helicopter hits the tunnel, so he has to pull back. So he jumps over to the helicopter.
Music kicks in.
But before it kicks in, there's a little musical sting here of like a huzzah, it's he's awful. Jumped over from the train to the helicopter. It's awful, and it doesn't
I thought that as well.
It's like something from an Indiana 100%, Jones film, which in that 100%, kind of film.
Exactly what I thought.
You know what it reminds me? It reminds me of a sting of something like a musical sting that you'd get on like Armageddon. You know, when the finally set off the bomb after struggling to set off the...
No,
it's so strange.
To me, it's an adventure action film.
Yeah, I'm a sting.
Like I thought
was in indie.
Like a pirate swinging across...
Yeah, Pirates of the Caribbean.
Boat to another.
Yeah.
So I'm like, it just doesn't fit here. It's really weird. And then the real music gets good.
And he's got some more chewing gum.
Cue the Mission Impossible theme. Ethan shouts, red light, green light, slams the gum onto the helicopter.
It blows
as
him
he
back.
Jumps, it blows up and it blows him back to the train.
And the train driver faints.
The copter blows up and the blade narrowly misses Ethan's neck. And then the train driver fades.
It's good, man. Not over yet, though.
That train driver is the scientist from 28 Days Later.
Oh, well, it's his fault.
Right, he's a famous comedian from the day-to-day and all that sort of stuff. Alan Partridge, maybe.
Yeah, you'll have seen him in... I can't remember his name.
David Schneider.
In random parts, yeah.
Ah.
So Luther hands Kittredge the list. He has a word with Max, but it looks like they're going to come to an agreement out of... Yeah. out the court, and you can do me a favor. I'll do you a favor.
Well, she says, like, my lawyer's going to have a field day with this. And it's like, come on, we'll sort this out outside the court.
Yeah,
there's no more need for bloodshed anymore. Fucking hell, shut up.
cut to Ethan and Luther at a cafe. He tells him
they're having a beer, aren't they? They're at Pub
Hook. Yeah, and Luther, how does it feel to be a solid citizen? So that suggests he's had his record sponged. Yeah. And then that's it. Ethan is on a flight. He's given a tip by the flight attendant, and the film ends. So that is Mission Impossible.
You know what? I was stupid and I thought, I'll wait for the trailers. There'll be something at the credits. There's something. Films didn't do that then.
Did do it back then.
Didn't do that.
There's no post-credit stings. Don't sit through this other than to listen to the cool music, which is actually the credits. The music credit, the music over the end credits is a slight, obviously, remix of it, which is quite cool. It's a quite cool one.
Yeah, right then.
That's by
U2. We did it.
The guys from U2 and Brian Eno, I think, did that.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Yeah, we did it. We did the first film. Let's talk about it.
So, thoughts? Well, from you, let's hear from you. You're the man who's not watched it before, like watched these before. I'm interested to hear what you think.
I was absolutely surprised to fuck with this film. What a competent little espionage action thriller. If that came out today like that, I'd be like, it's a bit lacking. Because it was 1996 and they got away with this and they did this on that small budget, all things considered. I was. It flew by the time I watched it twice. It flew by that fast, and it was just nonstop. It was brilliant. Everyone in it was fantastic. There wasn't a moment that I was like, I weren't bored ever. And there was something about Tom Cruise's chemistry in this. It came to life, and I think it always had since he played Lestat in Interview with the Vampire. That's when he started rising, and he started being like, you know what, I can have fun with my films. Like, when you watch him in Risky Business and Cocktail and stuff, he's just there to, like, chat women up. But in this, like, there's a charisma to him that... when you watch his film, you go, that's why he's the biggest movie star on the planet. This is where it began. There is a lot of charisma coming from... There's a lot of charisma coming from everyone. Every scene Ving Rhames is in, even if you just see him in background, what a cool motherfucker. Never in doubt. Everyone's in it. Emmanuel Baird, she's really good. John Voight, a great baddie. And Henry Cerny as Kittredge. Just solid, like, Boy Scout, do you know what I mean? It's just fucking, it just knocks it out of the park. And the cameos from Estevez and stuff, I did not expect any of this at all. The competence of it. It feels like a James Bond film. And when you think of James Bond films...
Yeah.
1996, we just had GoldenEye, hadn't we? In 95, I think. You can see what they've done an American Bond, haven't they? Basically.
Kept it a bit tighter than
Bond, I think it's though, tighter.
Even GoldenEye's starts to push the boundaries, didn't it? Like he's riding the tank and stuff like that.
It's more grounded.
It's just very low key. You'll see as we go along through these films,
get crazier.
Like the set pieces and the action gets bigger and louder and everything. And you'll go back to this and you'll just think, fuck me, that's such a tight.
Yeah. I think it's tight as fuck.
Tight knit film. Yeah.
If this was a one and done film forever, it'd be a cult classic. I think personally, it's like, it just reminds me of that era where they're like, let's just throw some other one and see if it sticks. And turns out that the thing that they threw were Tom Cruise and it stuck. You know what I mean?
So I think
he led this way with this.
I used to be a fan of the TV show, not when it came out originally, just the reruns.
I liked it as well as a kid.
But I think they took that concept because, you know, it's basically the same kind
of
thing.
In the TV show, they kept taking the masks off all the time, didn't they?
But they took this old show and you kind of go with it at the beginning because it's the same thing. Choose this mission, you choose this mission, blah, blah, blah. You get introduced. But like you say, you get introduced to the ensemble. And it just takes that really dark turn of taking them all out, this team that you think you're going to follow throughout the whole film.
I didn't see.
No.
Yeah, because like you say, in the show, they had some silly episodes where it was like, you've got to break into this florist and pick this white lily. This white lily will lead you. You should do a little like thing of the week type thing. There was never no overarching story to it. So I thought that's what we're getting with this. I thought I was going to get this team trying to do a heist. The heist is going to go wrong in some way and they need to reclaim something from the heist. No, it just kills everyone, all this team. They all get fucking killed. And they get killed by their leader. I mean, yeah. He didn't have to do this to kill his team. He could have just killed him in that room when he was telling them about it. Bang, 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 shot them all.
It's an elaborate plan, isn't it?
But that's what I liked about it. And it wasn't like, now you see me, or like Ocean's 11 style, 15 minutes of explanation of how this happened. It was easy to follow. And I think it's a very, very competent like hour and a half of film. I really do. I think it's really fucking good. I was pleasantly surprised. And I can't wait to see the next one.
So you, obviously you said you didn't trust Krieger, which is fine.
Yeah, like, I just know Sean, I know.
It just comes across as that anyway, but what were you thinking for that film? Where was your mind at in trying to figure out who Job was?
I thought we were going to see a really famous actor like John Hurt pop up and be fucking Job or some...
So you just thought it'd be some random
But a really well-known actor at the end and be like, I'm Job. I've been Job all along.
Well, that just shows how good the film is at, like, you know, confusing
bait and switch.
You, subverting your expectations and bait and switch and everything, because you weren't sat there going, well, it's clearly her because she survived.
I believed her because we're supposed to fall in love with her as viewers. We're supposed to, like, this beautiful petite woman. She can't betray
us. This is probably the start of that sort of twist with famous person in the movie being the bad person, because like you say, you kind of feel like he's innocent up to the point it's revealed. You know, you kind of think,
John Voight
has that face you could trust. And
also, he might be a progenitor of it. You might be right, mate. You might be right. But I thought it was going to be, at last 10 minutes, we'd see someone turn around in a chair, like, you know, like Dr. Evil type thing, but it's fucking John Hurt or fucking Ian McKellen or someone massive. Because when I go into these films, I did it with Harry Potter's, I don't go in and look at the cast list because it'll spoil a lot. I never do any of it. I don't even read plots. Like, I don't know if it's called Mission Impossible 2 or Mission Impossible 2, I'm in a tank today. I don't know what it's called. I have no idea.
I just forgot what the next one's called, actually. I'm sure it's got a tagline.
It's just Mission Impossible.
I thought it had a tagline. I generally thought it had one.
No, but yeah.
No, that's good though. That's,
it genuinely
that's really
subverted me. It felt like American Bond, but grounded. More Daniel Craig Bond than fucking like Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah, because there's so many films now that would do something like that, and I would be like, throughout the whole film, I'd be looking at it going, is it them?
Yeah,
I do it all the time, like trying to figure it out. And it, you know, sometimes I'm right, sometimes I'm way off the mark, but you do spend the whole films with these kind of things going, what's the mystery? Who's this? Who's that? And this does a good job of like leading you completely away from that. You don't even expect it to be anyone from his old team.
No. And the beauty of it is, it doesn't tell you that in the last 5 minutes of the film. Ethan knows it is. It's shown that we know that it's him, but we still carry on with the film with him having a little ace up his sleeve saying, at the last second, I can pull out the fact that I know it's him. And it plays off. It, you know what I mean? It comes to fruition. The whole plan. It shows the, like, as a point man, Ethan Hunt is unmatched. He's one of the best point men in the business, clearly, because he gets it done. He gets it done. And even though he went rogue for a few, you know, I know now that he's back in the INS and he's going to lead teams rather than be part of a team. That's how I feel like it is anyway. I don't know. I might be completely wrong, but he's proven to be the best point man in the fucking business. It's cool, man. I liked it. I really, really surprised the absolute fuck out of me. Genuinely.
Good. Well, we're off to a solid start then.
It's the best one I've seen.
Yeah. Where would you
top
rate
and
it?
Bottom. Number one.
Yeah, top and bottom.
So good. It's really good. I will watch this film again one day. I think it's a good film. And again, I can see why it spawned a franchise. It makes absolute fucking sense. So much charisma.
I really liked it. I just didn't like the final part. I just thought it's such a ridiculous, elaborate.
It's silly,
way
but
to escape.
I think if we didn't have that elaborate part at the end, I think it would have missed something elaborate. What would it have been? A car chase or? You know what I mean?
No, but it could have been something happening on the train, just as dangerous. I just think the whole idea of the chopper coming over,
brawl on the train,
rope,
shoot
He's got to use the thing to... It just seemed like out of nowhere, it just got so sort of ridiculous.
No, I know what you mean.
So many things could have gone wrong, you know, in a real world how sense. You're going to see it in this universe
is that Jim was the original Ethan Hunt at some point. That's how you're going to see he is capable. Mm. That's
yeah, you've also just got to look at the studio and not clearly going, we need
a set piece.
Because they haven't really, like, the other set piece in the film is that really tense, like,
which is the best scene in the film.
Yeah.
Yeah, there isn't any, like, big explosions or other, like, running around. And
if they would have used that at the end,
really low key.
I think that would have ruined this film. We needed that where it is.
In the middle of the film, it's really good for that, isn't it? Yeah, like I say, it's a very low-key film compared to like a lot of other action films.
I'm deadly looking forward to the second one. I can't wait.
So the second one, that'll be on our next show coming up next month, is 2000's Mission Impossible 2.
2000? So, 4 years. Okay.
Took 4 years, yeah. And this one is directed by John Woo.
What? Is there some doves in it? Is the doves and dual revolvers?
We can't reveal that at this point.
I think there's some doves in it at some point, but but you know, it's going to be very different to a Brian De Palma film.
So I'm kind of gutted it's not another Brian De Palma film, to be fair.
Yeah.
I know now this is going to be stunts before fucking hunts. Stunts before hunts!
I've got some trivia from the film if you want to.
Let's go.
Not a lot, just a few things. So the trick with the disappearing, reappearing CD that Ethan Hunt does to fool Krieger, it's not a camera trick or another visual effect, but a genuine sleight of hand trick from Tom Cruise.
He learned it. Of course he did. It's Tom fucking Cruise. It's Tom Cruise.
They were like, oh, we could probably just edit this out somehow. He'd be sat in his room every night going like this.
Fun fact about Tom Cruise. You know what? He did that sci-fi film after the Live, Die, Repeat one. He did another one.
Oblivion,
yeah. And in that, he speaks a bit of Chinese in it for a split second. And what he did in real life was learn Mandarin. Just for those few fucking lines, because that's just the kind of guy he is. It's all or nothing with him.
Next up, not only is this the only film in the franchise where Ethan Hunt doesn't fire a gun, it's the only one not to have a shootout or a gunfight.
I noticed that.
Did he fire a gun?
Nope.
I was going to bring that up, and I thought there is no shootout in this espionage film. It's solely espionage.
He never fires a gun. He holds a gun, points a gun, never fires it.
Wow.
That may change in the following films.
He doesn't kill a single person in this, does it? Like Bond is like pew 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 pew, shooting everybody.
Well, he does. He kills two people at the end.
Well, is he saving himself?
Blows them up.
Is he saving himself?
Yeah, but he still blows them up.
Yeah, that's true. He blows them up with chewing gum. That's true. That is true.
Next up, excuse pronunciation. Reza Bedi, I think, is the person responsible for directing more episodes of the original Mission Impossible television series than anyone else. He was asked by the head of Paramount Pictures to be present on the set for consulting and advising. Director Brian De Palma approached him and told him how much he enjoyed the original series, but he also added that the movie would be nothing like the television show and that his presence on the set would only result in making both of them uncomfortable. But he thanked him for his honesty and left the set never to return.
Da-da!
Also inspired by the movie, a helicopter actually successfully flew through a tunnel in Brazil in 2006.
Yeah, not the Channel Tunnel, though.
No. And Peter Graves, who played Jim Phelps in the original Mission Impossible, turned down the opportunity to reprise his role in the movie after he learned that his character was killed off at the end of the movie. He also turned down the role because of the negative handling of the character, which in turn led to the other cast members of the old series to turn down their cameo offers as well. Greg Morris, who played Barney Collier in the original series, walked out of this movie halfway through, citing displeasure with the turning of the Jim Phelps character and the overall production. They really took it to heart, didn't they?
No, because Jim was a goodie in the show. He was a big goodie.
100%. Yeah. It's also notable as being one of the last major Hollywood films to be released on Betamax.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I'd love to watch that copy.
This will blow your minds a little bit. Cruise chose Mission Impossible to be the inaugural project of his new production company, and he convinced Paramount to put up a $70 million budget, and then he deferred his $20 million fee for a percentage of the box office takings and ended up earning a reported $70 million. He never needed to work again!
What a smart man. He knew they had a hit on their hands.
And your final fact, the pub at the end of the film, the Anchor Bank side. I supported my area manager with a disciplinary case in that exact same pub.
Were you part of the IMF?
Yeah. I did accept that mission.
Yeah. Awesome.
Didn't blow him up with some chewing gum, though.
No. Just some choice words and some jelly deals. Oi, oi, oi.
Squeezed a cut lemon in their eye.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, that is.
Did you guys like it? Sorry.
Oh, yeah. I really like it.
Yeah, it's a great. It's, like I said, everything is great. It's really enjoyable. Very sort of noir feeling to it. That suspense.
Very noir.
You know, like I like Untouchables from De Palma. Yes. It was a brilliant film. It had that kind of feel throughout the whole thing.
It did.
I just thought that final stunt was just a little bit too much for me. I would have liked something more intense in the train.
It's not the longest of set pieces anyway. It's 5 minutes of the film.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, there's a lot of other films that would have dragged that out. So
yeah, 15 minutes, yeah.
It's not too bad.
But yeah.
Yeah, I enjoy it. I like it. So
Mission Impossible 2 is coming up.
Yeah, so Mission Impossible 2 will be up next. So look out for that in your Patreon feeds. This episode, like all of our others, will go out for free.
Mm-hmm.
So just to get you a little bit of a taster. So if you've listened to this and you enjoy it, you'll be able to listen to the rest of the series if you sign up for our Patreon at patreon.com/modernescapism. And yeah, hopefully you enjoyed that and you come and join us on our journey through Mission Impossible.
And they better accept that mission, otherwise they'll self-destruct.
Oh!
Now that is goodbye from me, Oodles, and Biggie.
Bye.
Bye.
This podcast will self-destruct in 5 seconds.
Relax, Luther. It's much worse than you think. The terminal is in a black vault lockdown. The only person allowed in the room has to pass through a series of security checks.
William Donlow.
The first is a voice print identification and a 6-digit access code. This only gets him into the outer room. Next, he has to pass a retinal scan. And finally, the intrusion countermeasures are only deactivated by a double electronic keycard, which we won't have. Now, inside the Black Vault, there are 3 systems operating whenever the technician is out of the room. The first is sound sensitive. Anything above a whisper sets it off. The second system detects any increase in temperature. Even the body heat of an unauthorized person in the room will trigger it if the temperature rises just a single degree. Now that temperature is controlled by the air conditioning coming in through an overhead duct 30 feet above the floor. That vent is guarded by a laser net. The third system is on the floor and is pressure sensitive. The slightest increase in weight will trigger the alarm. And any one of these systems, if set off, will activate an automatic lockdown. Now, believe me when I tell you, gentlemen, all 3 systems are state of the art.
And you really think we can do this?
We're going to do it.